Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, February 7th, 2012, and I'm your host, Ariel Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra. Tonight, our topic is the Hopi Tibetan prophecies, first with Kimberly Ruff and later with Suzanne Toro. Kimberly, who is a quarter Cherokee, was adopted into the Hopi family in 2006 and has a fascinating story with a message of hope in the 2012 prophecies. And I do want to mention that tonight, right now, it's Kimberly's birthday, so happy birthday to you.
like my sister, my mom, they always do that.
To stick that in there, sorry. And on 8-8 of 08, Grandfather Martin of the Hopi family asked her to begin writing about the Hopi Tibetan prophecies, and since that time, Kimberly has written 27 postings for the Ground Crew website. She is also a featured author in the number one bestseller, Transforming Through 2012. And she's also appeared on Coast to Coast with George Noory. Her website for her writing of postings is thegroundcrew.com/Kimberly, and that's K-Y-M-B-E-R-L-E-E underscore Ruff, R-U-F-F. And the website for the book Transforming Through 2012 is, oddly enough, TransformingThrough2012.com. In the second half of the show, we'll be joined by Suzanne Toro, a poet and author who has engaged in shamanic work with indigenous tribes in many parts of the world, and ultimately acting as a bridge between nations, worlds, and dimensions. And she'll continue on our topic of the Hopi Tibetan prophecies and share stories of her work. And her website is SuzanneToro.com, which is SuzanneToro.com. We want to thank Sahar for hosting the switchboard this evening. And if you have questions for Kimberly or Suzanne, please call in on 917-889-8292 and then press 1 so we know you have a question. If you like the show, don't forget to click follow on our show page and remember to tell a friend about us. For our new listeners, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation, and we also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. Plus, we're on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. Now, we'll get started with Kimberly in just a minute, but first, I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone consultation. You can find out if you have star markings and how they determine your natural state and rites of passage. We now offer a Stage 4 support service with Sierra for contactees and abductees, so check out Sierra's World on our main site. And don't forget, if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by requesting your solar return timing. Your manifestational ability is amplified 1,000-fold during those 10 hours, so make the most of it. And now I would like to introduce Sierra, our co-host for the evening. Hello, Sierra.
Hello. It's so great to be working with you ladies today. Really great.
And we do want to say hello. Lavendar's on the line. Hello, Lavendar.
Hi, everyone, and we have a full moon in Leo, so this is going to be a great show. Everybody's going to buckle up, buttercup. That's what this is about.
That's a new code word for the season, buckle up, buttercup. Okay, and now we would like to introduce Kimberly Ruff. Hello, Kimberly.
Hi. Hi, everybody. It's so fun to be here. And you just said about the birthday, and as I met, you mentioned, today is my birthday, so I hope that I'm in the middle of the 10-hour power right now on the radio.
Well, you very well could be, and and your energy, you would be able to feel it, because you seem like you've got a lot of energy tonight.
Yes.
So.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm very, and plus I feel very happy about talking about this subject. So yeah, it's a wonderful thing.
Okay.
Well,
great.
Wonderful.
I'm going to turn this over to Sierra, who is also like Kimberly, a quarter Cherokee. So we're going to let the sisters get it on now. Let's go.
This sounds good.
Hello, sister. How are you doing this evening? I'm so happy to be talking to you about this particular subject.
Thanks. I'm doing really, really well. And I'm also sort of excited to be doing an interview on something called the Starseed Academy, because I've done several radio shows, and each one has a little bit of a different audience. And so my guess is I will be able to speak freely about certain things on this station that I haven't really talked about much yet. And why?
Absolutely.
I think that'll be kind of fun.
You'll find that our Starseed community is very wide open. Their minds are open. Their hearts are open. Their souls are open. You're going to find a home here with whatever it is that you would like to share with us.
That sounds great.
Wonderful. And it is so great to talk to, you know, a quarter-blood Cherokee. And this particular message really touches me. I came in with the genetic memory of the Phoenix Rising and what we're doing during 2012 and beyond.
Yes.
So I'm really excited. I'm sure our Starseed community is. So why don't we just go ahead and get started?
Alrighty. Well, I will jump in. The first thing I wanted to say is, as far as if you're looking for me on the Ground Crew website and you didn't get all those letters, all you have to do is type in www.thegroundcrew.com, and, you know, it'll take you to my page. But I was thinking I could probably start with how I got involved with the Ground Crew. I have been involved with the Hopi and the Tibetans now since 2001, which I'll get into in a second. But in 080808, Grandfather Martin Gatra Sioma, who I was adopted into his family, said he was going deaf, and he was basically going to retire, and he asked if I would take the message of the Hopi Tibetan prophecy to the world. And I had no idea how to do that. I'm a psychotherapist by profession. I'm not a writer. And he just sort of laughed and said, you know, I will send you these dreams and it will show you exactly what to do. And he did. So as soon as I returned from first I went to Hopi, and then I came back to Santa Barbara, and there were these there's a very amazing Tibetan Lama, His Eminence Dzongsar Khyentse Rinpoche, was doing a special empowerment on how to receive transmissions, which was perfect timing. And then I had a dream about a woman. There was this place called the Ground Crew, and there was this lovely woman with flowing brownish blonde hair, and she was making scrambled eggs, and she said, will you come join us? And you can write on my post. Well, so I had no idea. So when I woke up, I Googled the Ground Crew, and sure enough, this woman was there. And when I called her on the telephone, she was actually making scrambled eggs. And so I said, why are you called the Ground Crew? And long story short, she said that kind of she believed and her people believed that they were from perhaps the Pleiades, and they were sent here to do this work. So they're kind of the Ground Crew from the Pleiades. Well, that didn't sound that bizarre to me, because the Cherokees sort of believe that they're from the Pleiades. It's not like some wacky, crazy concept. It's what they think. So I felt completely at home with her. Name is Valerie Donner, and she's just lovely. And so then I began writing what Grandfather and the Tibetans were asking me to write. And then after I'd written for a couple of years, this woman said, would you like to write a chapter in this book? And that was the Transforming Through 2012. And from the book, now there's these radio shows. And so it's been amazing, and it really does feel like to me that 2012 is the year of remembering, that it's the year that we are all supposed to remember where we came from, what we're doing here, and what each person's specific assignment is. And that is why I was asked to do these radio shows, and to particularly crank it up in 2012, because so much is supposed to happen that is wonderful, just great stuff. And so I've just been enjoying this since this year started. So, yeah, I just wanted to mention as far as this starseed thing that, I'm kind of right there with you.
Perfect. That's great. Yes, it is true. You know, the Cherokee verbal tradition is that
yes.
we come from the Pleiades, and the Pleiadians are responsible for our genetic bloodline and our makeup. So
yeah.
we come with a lot of genetic memory and different things, and some of us, you know, as you know, we all carry a different mission, and yours
yes.
is to talk about this Hopi Tibetan prophecy, yes? Can you
yes.
tell us a little bit more about what the Hopi Tibetan prophecy
oh, yes, sure.
is?
I will tell you about the prophecy, and then I will later tell you, if you're interested, how I got, you know, involved. It turns out that the Hope. Oh, first I must make an important disclaimer. I am not a Hopi prophecy carrier. Only someone who's Hopi can be a Hopi prophecy carrier. I am not a Tibetan prophecy carrier. Only someone who is a reincarnation of either Padmasambhava or one of his 25 disciples who was there when he said the prophecies can be a Tibetan prophecy carrier. I am the messenger of this third prophecy, which is created from the mirror, the sameness of these two prophecies. There's a little place where they connect, where they are the same. And this is what this prophecy, that's why it's called the Hopi Tibetan prophecy, and I'm the messenger of that. So the way this goes is the Hopi Indians have a prophecy that goes back very, very, very long time, and like thousands of years. Some people would say, you know, back past the Anasazi, and that they are descendants of the Anasazi. This Hopi prophecy begins when the Iron Eagle flies and the horses run on wheels, and then it goes into this oral tradition, which until recently was kept private from everyone, and it takes 8 to 9 days to tell, and you learn it in the kivas, and that's how it used to be. Well, the prophecy talks about, at least what I'm allowed to talk about, the part I'm allowed to speak of is the part that applies to us. It talks about there will be a time when the Hopi are in trouble, and their family from the east will return with this message. And it's very specific. It talks about bringing like a religion of compassion, and that these people with red capes and red caps will come, and, you know, it just goes all into this. Well, then it turns out that in the 8th century, the second Buddha, Padmasambhava, he was the Buddha that turned everything around in Tibet. Tibet had been a place of just black magic and all kinds of trouble, and Padmasambhava was able to tame all of that dark energy and turned it into this magical land of the loving kindness. So he is the Buddha that did this, and he also told many, many prophecies during that time. And one of the prophecies begins exactly the same. When the horses run on wheels, when the Iron Eagle flies and the horses run on wheels, and it goes on to say that the Tibetans will lose their land and go to the land of the red man to teach the Dharma. Well, the Hopi prophecy is very, very long. It takes 8 to 9 days to tell, and just the beginning part talks about this. The Tibetans have many prophecies that Padmasambhava told, and they're all really short. So just that little place where they are the same is what created the Hopi Tibetan prophecy. And this prophecy was activated. It actually began in the year 1974. It was in 1959 that the Tibetans were driven out of their land. The Chinese occupied Tibet, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama and as many people as possible escaped from Tibet, and they're still actually trying to escape. But that was not the beginning of the Hopi Tibet prophecy. The beginning of the Hopi Tibet prophecy was when the two came together. So in 1974, His Holiness the 16th Karmapa came to Hopi, and they had this wonderful, wonderful way that they do things, and still do. And they have this Tibetan oracle that tells them, like, what to do. I mean, they ask questions, and like when the Dalai Lama was wondering when if he should leave Tibet, if he should stay. It was a Tibetan oracle that said, stay, 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 and one night, leave now, take this path, and, well, the rest is history. So it was a Tibetan oracle that told His Holiness the 16th Karmapa, Hopi, because to talk about going to the land of the red man, I mean, there are native tribes in all of North America, Turtle Island, but the Tibetan oracle said the Hopi. So the very, very first activation was when His Holiness the 16th Karmapa came to Hopi and they first met. And it was during this meeting that it became known that there are actually many similarities between these two cultures. It's as though they're ultimately from the same place. And of course, this is what I've been told. That's why this whole star, you know, nations thing is so amazing. One of the similarities, if you look on the globe, Tibet and Hopi are on the opposite side of each other. So it's when it's day in Tibet, it's night in Hopi. And the language even reflects that. The word for sun in Hopi is Dawa. The word for moon in Tibetan is Dawa. And then the other way around, the word for moon in Hopi is Nima. And the word for sun in Tibet is Nima. So there's and like the sand paintings, the sacred sand mandalas of Tibet are just like the sacred sand paintings that the Hopi and Navajo have. And so there's many, many, many similarities. And so this was how the Hopi-Tibetan prophecy was originally activated. So did you want to ask questions? Or, you know, like I say, I can go into how we became involved, but that is... The Hopi, how the Hopi-Tibetan prophecy happened. Actually, what I should say is, like, first, the most important thing, the message, I'm going to give this crow some food. He's making noise. The message of the Hopi-Tibetan prophecy is the Sanskrit message, Om Mani Padme Hum. And it, in those six syllables, somehow contains all of the teachings of the Buddha's original 84,000 teachings. And so the message of the Hopi Tibet prophecy is one of compassion and loving kindness and hope. And the reason I was asked to do these radio shows and books and whatever is because the Hopi Tibet prophecy has a specific outcome for what is supposed to happen after December 21st, 2012, that there's all this stuff around, you know, what does it mean and whatever. And every religion, tradition, they all have something to say. The Hopi-Tibetan prophecy talks about that the day after, the day December 22nd, 2012, will be the beginning of what they call the time of never-ending peace. So it's really an amazing, hopeful prophecy. And I was asked specifically in 2012 to go out in the world and tell this because there's so much fear. So many people are worried about what's going to happen. So it's very important to get the message out that it's going to be great. We have passed through all of this scary stuff, and wonderfulness is just around the corner. So did you have any questions about any of that? I can certainly answer any questions.
Absolutely, absolutely. So... what can you say a little bit more about the time of never-ending peace that comes after December 21st, 2012?
Like what's supposed to happen? I've heard it called 1,000 years of peace. It is not unlike what other traditions, like the Christians, talk about this and whatever. That the Hopi, like I said, it's a mirror, it's a blending of the two cultures. The Hopi have a very, very famous Hopi prophecy rock. Have you heard about this rock that they have, the Hopi prophecy rock?
Yes.
But it has these two paths. And there's one path that is a path of the two-hearted, which means, like, you know, they sort of talk out two sides of the mouth. And the path of the two-hearted ends in nuclear annihilation, environmental collapse, all of that. The path of the one heart ends in this, you know, amazing time. And no one really knew which way it was going to go. In fact, Grandfather Thomas Banyanka, who discovered the Hopi Prophecy Rock, even at the time he died, which was in 1999, he wasn't sure. From people who knew him, they said he didn't think we were going to make it. And that was only in 1999. Since then, we have cranked. We have pulled it off. We have turned the corner. And from what I have been told by the elders I study with, is that we made it. And that we have entered into what the Hopi call the fifth world. We have already chosen the path of the one heart, and that it's not no matter what you hear in the news about Iran or whatever, it's not going to happen. That we have already, in the future, achieved this time of never-ending peace. That it really could have gone either way, but the people here on Earth now, made this happen. That there's a whole theory that everyone here signed up for this grand experiment, and some of us were supposed to remember why we came and then subsequently help. And apparently enough of us did. Enough of us remembered why we were here and did the sacred ceremonies. I have so many friends that have done just amazing and important rituals and ceremonies and just praying and reaching out to Pachamama, Mother Earth, give us another chance, and that we succeeded. And that so it's not going to happen overnight, but it will begin the energy of turning it around where we will live in a world where we actually have the capacity to get along. So it's... And they even talk about how this could happen. What a lot of people don't know is that there's actually a second Hopi Prophecy Rock. It's right by the first one. And it is a drawing on this rock of an instrument. And Grandfather Martin was very, very clear. He said, this is not a spaceship. It is an instrument. It is a satellite. And the theory was that there will come a time when this machine can be built, where everyone in the world can talk to each other all the time. Language will not be a barrier. And, of course, when this rock was drawn, it seemed, you know, like pretty unlikely. But this is the Internet, that it really has had the potential to save the planet. And according to what I've been taught, it pretty much has, that the goodness in the people's hearts has allowed everyone to bring that goodness out where we together all seem to want to save our planet, and we kind of are. So it's just really an amazing, happy time. And they say that everyone on Earth right now signed up for this experiment, and more and more are remembering. And so it's going to be great.
Oh, that's so great. It's interesting because there's some verbal traditions passed down in my clan that talk about the choice that the Hopi talk about, which is the path of the two hearts and the path of the one heart.
Yep.
And I get asked often, so is it an actual different world that we are going to be going to? Are we going to be staying in the same world? Is it like a different dimension that we kind of wake up into and we raise our consciousness to a certain level that the power-hungry people and the two hearts end up in one world, or we end up in a different world? And I don't think the enemy has the real answer to that, but I do agree with you that the Internet has played a key role in bringing people's awareness and their consciousness up, and the information, the flow of information has been so important over these last years. So now that everybody knows what's happening all over the world, if they want to. You know,
and that's what's changing the energy. I was taught, do you know the Venerable Johnny Wahoo. She's a full-blood Cherokee. She's also an ordained Tibetan
Lama.
You know, she wrote this book called Voices of Our Ancestors, and she talks about that in 1969, the Cherokees had this council meeting that said, it's time. We need to either bring this out into the world or we're not going to see seven generations. And so what I have been told is that the Internet has allowed us to create this compassion grid all around the planet, and that basically there are more people now that have the one heart, and that that's what the shift is. There's going to be more and more, and that they also talk about the new children, that right around the early 90s, these old souls began being born on this planet. And what I was told in the Hopi Tibet prophecy is that it is our job, like our age people that were the scouts that originally came, to try and keep the planet from blowing itself up, and that as of December 22nd, 2012, these children are going to then become the age where they will be running things, and they have brought some amazingness with them. So our job was just to get through this, and then they're going to take over as we, like, grow old or whatever.
Does that have something to do with the Axis Twins and the Hopi creation story? Can you speak a little bit about that?
Oh, I'd love to. The Axis Twins is a story in the Hopi creation story. And I would have to look up, you know, their names. I should have had that ready. But they represent the North Pole and the South Pole. I have been told that Grandfather Martin Gotra Sioma is one of the Axis Twins, and Venerable Bhakatuka Rinpoche is the other Axis Twin. And I've spoken with him about it, and I have been told they think so, too. So to explain who those two people are, I'd like to now explain to Tina a little bit about how I got involved in this and how I came to meet these two amazing, amazing beings. Is that okay if I jump into that now?
Perfect. That's a perfect time. Go ahead.
Okay, perfect. Okay. In 2001, I got a call. I was at the time of just being a therapist. I had two little boys, age 4 and 7. I got a phone call to go downtown that there were Tibetan lamas that had come to Santa Barbara and were asking me to bring my son. They told me this crazy story that my son was a reincarnation of one of their Tibetan lamas. Well, in August of 2001, I had absolutely no idea what any of them were talking about. I didn't even know where Tibet was. And, you know, I thought it was a city in China. Of course, it turned out that's what they want people to think, et cetera. And I found out later, if you've seen that movie Little Buddha, that the Tibetans have this tradition that when their tukus or lamas or rinpoches pass, they say where they're going to be found. They give a roadmap, and then they send out a search team, and they go looking for their teachers. It's just what they do. Like, you know, when a high lama passes, they begin saying prayers for their a swift rebirth. And then they just sort of take turns going back and forth. I mean, it's a beautiful tradition. So in 1959, when the Chinese took over Tibet, the tukus and lamas and rinpoches stopped reincarnating in Tibet because, you know, everyone there was getting tortured and killed and is awful. So the tukus began being born pretty much everywhere except Tibet. And they were saying that my son was one of these beings. But I didn't know any of this. So first, to be honest, I didn't, well, believe it. Over time, I have come to believe it. A group of monks came in August of 2001. A different group of Tibetan monks came in September 2001. And this is all around, you know, September 11th, 2001, and all of that.
How old was your son at this time?
He was 4, which was, they begin looking for the reincarnations between ages 2 and 4. That's what they do. And it's kind of neat because at that young age, they can still remember their last life. They seem to forget it as time goes on, they take on this incarnation. So my son, at the time, he knew exactly what was going on. I didn't know what was going on. I mean, I knew he had been unusual because he spoke about his friend, the Dalai Lama. But then I was told by some of these monks that came looking for him, this group came from Mongolia, that in 1959, my son had been an old lama, but he was actually with the group that escaped over the Himalayas that March 17th, 1959. The National Tibetan Uprising Day was March 10th, 1959. March 17th was the night that the Dalai Lama disguised himself as a soldier and escaped over the mountains. And the Dalai Lama was 16 at the time. They say my son was this old man and died on the trip. But there were a couple of lamas that were young. There were two. There were these two cousins, Venerable Tashi and Venerable Dawa, cousins. And the first group that came was Venerable Dawa. Venerable Tashi, living in Mongolia, asked to come over and see him. And by then, they're like in their late 40s. And they'd been like 2 years old. Their families had carried them over. So they came over and told me that my son was this person. So it was amazing. So in December of 2001, I was asked to bring my son to meet the Venerable Baka Tuka Rinpoche. I never met any of these people because only certain Rinpoches are allowed to say if someone is a reincarnation. Not just any Tibetan is allowed to say this. And so, yes, he told me he was a tulku and all of this, and the two of them seemed to remember each other, and they had a great time. And at this time, the Venerable Baka Tuka Rinpoche gave me a stone, a rock with ancient writing. And I didn't even know what it was. I mean, I remember I was like, oh, and then he smiled at me in that way that he does, and he turned it around. And I didn't know what it was for. And anyway, the very next month was January 2002. A woman came to me representing the Hopi, and she said, did any of the Tibetans give your son a rock with ancient writing? I said, well, actually, yes. Why? She said, well, we have been looking for this, and a group of people did a vision quest with Chief Archie Fire Lane Deer, who was a famous Lakota chief, and we believe it's you. Well, the wacky thing is I'd actually met Chief Lane Deer years before. He did a sweat lodge here in La Concepcion in, you know, Northern Santa Barbara County. My sister had been visiting. We did this whole thing. So that's how he knew who I was. So anyway, I was sort of blown away and had no intention of going, but they said, no, it's really important. So on 020202, I was asked to go to the Hopi Reservation with this rock with ancient writing and deliver it to Grandfather Martin Goshua Sioma of the Hopi, because he was the keeper of the sacred tablets of the Fire Clan. So this prophecy that had been passed along, he was his keeper of these sacred tablets. And so we went to Hopi, and much to my delight, I recognized him. As you know from being Cherokee, I have heard that they are the most mystic of the tribes. And I am a dreamer, and I've inherited the lineage of the Cherokee Dreamwalker. So all my life, this native man has been in my dreams. And when we opened the door, there he was. There was Grandfather Martin. So this was how I became involved, where the Tibetans came looking for us, then the Hopi came looking for us. I mean, I've not gone looking for any of this. It's just been a crazy but beautiful journey.
What an amazing journey. Absolutely. Oh. How is your son doing today? I mean, how is he involved with Tibetan people, and is he involved, or what are you doing
with him? He is one of the most amazing people I've ever met. They say that he is a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva is a being that has already reached enlightenment, and they've made a promise to just come back and back and back in a cycle of samsara until all beings are released from suffering. I mean, and it sounds
amazing.
Impossible, but he is like this. He is now 15 and a half. It's been 11 years. He is the sweetest, funniest, happiest person I ever met. He's very Tibetan-like. The amazing thing is he's been on board with this the whole time. And I'm raising him to live in both worlds. Like at the school where he goes, no one knows anything. I'm raising him as a Western child, and I'm also raising him in the old ways, in the old traditions, that the lamas told me to make sure he gets his training. So Venerable Bhakka Tukur Rinpoche has a sangha here in Santa Barbara, and his nephew, the amazing Tukul Orjun Rinpoche, who is just a reincarnation of an enlightened yogi, he is just pure love. He actually lives here in Santa Barbara, and he's been teaching us. And so I have since gotten very involved and taken refuge in all of this. But to answer your question about my son, it is a blessing to be with this child. I've never heard him badmouth anybody. I've only heard him say wise things. I mean, it's actually like I have the gift of being raised with some enlightened being. And he's so adorable. And so we have our Tibet / Hopi life, and then he has his other world where we just don't talk about it. And so, you know, we go to the Sangha if there's an empowerment, if His Holiness the Dalai Lama is in town, you know, like he's coming back in April, the Dalai Lama. We go if there's something happening at the Sangha. But the thing is, he doesn't really need the teaching. He remembers it all. In fact, I took him to this one class. It was Longchenpa's 7-point mind training, and I just didn't follow any of it. And Joe was on the drive home telling me, oh, yes, I believe that the reason that Tulku used dreams as a metaphor was to help the people comprehend. And this is like a few years ago. He's just a young child, and he's explaining to me not only what the class meant, but why Tulku taught it in that way. I mean, this is
That's
just
amazing. Now, is there any kind of agreement for him to go somewhere or to do something at a certain age from this point forward now?
Sort of a little bit, you know, yes. I have been told that he is the human link between these, you know, two prophecies, that they say the first activation of the Hopi Tibet prophecy was when His Holiness the 16th Karmapa came to Hopi. They say the second activation was when, you know, my son was brought into this, and he goes to Hopi with me every time. And then they say that the third activation is, which I'm not really at liberty to talk about yet, that something is supposed to happen to Hopi this year, because the whole point of this was to bring the compassion Dharma teachings to Hopi, and we are actually in the process of hoping to pull that off in 2012. And so, yeah.
Now, does that have anything to do with the Lost City of the Dead in the Grand Canyon where the Hopi?
Sort of. I'm so glad you brought that up. That's another amazing, wonderful story. Have you ever heard of this Lost City of the Dead in the Grand Canyon?
First of all, the Grand Canyon is my favorite place in the entire world,
gosh.
And I just spent 2 days there.
Yes, Google it. It's all over. And even one of my postings I've written about it. But Grandfather Martin used to ask me about, did you find the City of Tunnels? You know, and as of, like all of it, I have no idea what he's even talking about. Well, in 1909, the Smithsonian paid this explorer, G.E. Kincaid, to go and investigate this legend, fabled cave. It was kind of like, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark. And so apparently he found this cave. And what was amazing about this discovery is that they found all kind of, like, you know, Anasazi-type artifacts and et cetera. They also found a statue of a Buddha in this cave under the Grand Canyon. I mean, is that amazing,
That's amazing.
Or what?
It's absolutely amazing. It's so interesting how similar the two peoples are.
That they have been working together on this.
How are you involved in the Lost City?
That's a great question. So, like all of it, somebody came and tracked me down. And, you know, Kincaid passed, and it was, you know, he died. And this amazing sweetheart of a person, Jack Andrews, has sort of taken up, you know, the cause for the Lost City of the Dead in the Grand Canyon. And he contacted me because I've been able to meet all these people. It's just like, you know, this part about remembering. I had a dream years ago that said, it is time to gather the others. And so we're finding each other. So this amazing person, Gary David, who wrote the book The Orion Zone, he was friends with Jack and friends with me because we had used Gary's book as a map for this pilgrimage I had done with Maria Riesperu and Woody Vaspra a few years back, and that's a whole other story. But anyway, so Jack says to me, Kimberly, there is a legend that there is a woman of mixed heritage, white and native, that is somehow affiliated with the Hopi prophecy that will be able to explain what that Buddha statue is doing there. How did it get there? What's the point? And I said, Jack, I can't even tell you which Buddha it is. I mean, most people don't even know there's a bunch of Buddhas. So I've been dreaming about this cave all my life. So when he told me about this, I was able to tell him. And indeed, it is the statue of the Buddha Varakana. Well, Bhagatuka Rinpoche is the reincarnation of Varakana. Varakana was one of the 25 disciples. When Padmasambhava told the prophecy, when the Iron Eagle flies, you know, we'll go to the land of the red people, Bhagatuka Rinpoche was there in the body of Varakana back then. And this, so this is why Bhagatuka Rinpoche is one of the Axis twins. Grandfather Martin is one of the Axis twins. They have known about each other. And if you look on, you know, my web thing I've written, or if you just Google it, they look like twins. They look identical in the face. They look, and they know each other, and they love each other. And I talked to Bhagatuka after this, you know, cave thing, and he just did that laughing that he does and giggled, ah, so you found it. You know, they've known all along, but they aren't going to tell us. In fact, I'll tell you another side story, if you don't mind. You know, the Hopi talk about Shambhala. I'm sorry, the Hopi talk about the fifth world. The Tibetans talk about Shambhala. At the time that we are entering into what the Hopi call, you know, the fifth world, the Tibetans talk about we are entering into the time of Shambhala. I mean, all these cultures are saying the same thing. They used to have different names. Well, in the Tibetan prophecies, Padmasambhava talked about the hidden land and what they call Shambhala. There is this saying that Padmasambhava said that the causes and conditions must be met on, you know, this planet in order to find Shambhala. Well, a few years ago, back in 19 whatever I think it was, you know, the story about the Smithsonian and the cave, National Geographic funded this explorer named Ian Baker, and he did like either 10 visits over 8 years or 8 visits over 10 years, I forget. He found it. But the way he found Shambhala, this is a part that just cracks me up. There's a book out called In the Heart of the World by Ian Baker, and it's a big, thick book. He tells the whole story. After going around and around trying to find this place, he finally went to Bhagatuka and said, "Do you know how to get there?" And Bhagatuka smiles and draws him a map.
it just cracks me up.
They have always known this, but the whole point was we needed to remember and know what to do. They could have told us, but that wasn't how this was supposed to go. And so Tukul Orjan, my teacher, you know, when I was telling about the nephew, he is actually in Pimlico right now. He's coming back in March. He is the reincarnation of Togden Sither, who that was his place. He had a temple there, which, of course, you know, was run down. So he has gone back every winter for years since this happened to rebuild the temple. And the beautiful thing is the temple is to be completed in Pimlico 2012, and it's going to be consecrated this year. And so it's all coming together in 2012, just magic after magic after magic. So
absolutely.
I'm so,
now, is the location of that actually down in the Grand Canyon? Is it a tributary from the Grand Canyon? Is it a cave like near the river then?
Oh, the cave of the Grand Canyon? First of all, it's practically impossible to find. It's a 5-day hike into the canyon, and then you have to shear a 1,500-foot cliff. So to find it is extremely difficult. But the other thing is I would like to share with people, don't bother going to look for it. The government cleaned it out 100 years ago when this was first found. It doesn't matter. what matters is that the message, you know, got out, that there is a Buddha statue there. That was all that was important, was that there be proof that the Tibetans and Hopi go back before we even knew anything. So, you know, like in that movie, you know, the Raiders of the Last Ark, how they, like, took everything and put it in these, like, warehouses, like Area 51. That's pretty much what happened. But it doesn't matter. And it all still exists, you know, in the interdimensional state. But if the way, if you talk to the Tibetans about this, the reason it was there has been activated. So when people say, oh, should I go looking for it? It's like, it doesn't matter. That's not the point anymore. You know, it's here. We're moving along. And so, yeah, the cave is actually part of the Hopi Tibet prophecy, because the rock that Baka Tukur Rinpoche gave to me to give to Grandfather Martin, in Sanskrit, it said, Om Mani Padme Hum. Well, that's what was written at the bottom of the statue, that there were some photos taken, and et cetera. And that message, Om Mani Padme Hum, is pretty much, they say, the message that will get us through this. So it's just, it's like we're living in a time where it's just, like, more amazing than Raiders of the Lost Ark, but equally as fun. So did you have any more questions?
Yes, actually, there's a couple more things to touch on. So we'll see if we've got a time for a couple questions for our.
Of course, of course. Yeah, I have to stop at 5 to pick up my son from school. I could
talk
forever. I have
to get going. What should we expect leading up to December 22nd, 2012? And then what should we expect after December 22nd, 2012?
Everything is becoming more intense. And so in both ways. So the people that are frightened are going to get more frightened. They're going to worry more and whatever. But the other people, the ones that are beginning to remember, it's just going to be more and more magic. That they say the veil is thinner, that it will be way, way easier to access the angels or whatever you want to call them. In between worlds, this world and the dream state, will all be so much easier to get information, that people have the capacity to begin waking up to why we all signed on to come here. In fact, there's something I'd like to share that I have not shared on any of the other radio shows, but if this is the Starseed Academy, I can probably talk about it.
Absolutely. Go for it.
So here's the story. I was told all of this when I was 2 years old. When I was 2 years old, I was born in Arkansas, in the Cherokee Nation. My parents moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico. I didn't really relate back then very much to other people. I spent ages 2 to 6 out in the little mesas talking to lights. And I remember them very clearly, and I remember everything that they said. And my mother, of course, was worried, and she took me to a psychiatrist who actually said, no, she's just very creative. And here's what the lights told me. They said, we are from the Pleiades. Kimberly, you are from here, too. You agreed to go down as a scout. There are other scouts besides you. You are not alone. There are other scouts in your age group. I was born in 1958. And, 58 years ago today. No, 48 years ago today. No, wait, how old am I? 54. This is not working at all. I was born on February 7th, 1958. These lights came to me in 1960 when I was 2 years old. And these lights said, you are there as a scout with others. You are there to get back to us to tell us, can we do this? Is this planet a place where we can pull off this grand experiment? I have been told that it had been tried in other places in the universe and failed, and that they were going to try it here, and that we were to send back transmissions, should we go for it? And so I would send them back transmissions, yes. And there were others, more and more and more, and so then they began this grand experiment, and this is what we have pulled off. Well, the part that blew me away is when my son, this little Tuku boy, was 4 or 5 years old, I was rocking him one day, and I was telling him, you know, sweetie pie, when I was your age, I used to sit out on the mesa, and I would talk to these lights, and they would talk to me, and there was a red one, and a yellow one, and a green one. And you know what my son says to me? He says, I know, Mama, I was the green one. My brother was a yellow. The red was our sister. She did not make it.
Oh.
Yes. And
oh.
I was like, are you kidding me? And he said, no. No. And what is so interesting is, so I was born in 1958. He died in 1959, you know, during the occupation when they escaped over the Himalayas. He passed away. And so in 1960, when these lights began appearing, he was in this spirit form. You know, and so it just blows my mind that this child remembered this, like, you know, amazing adventure that we all planned. Something else before I run out of time, I really want to stress, it's so, so important. The Hopi prophecy talks about finding the missing part of the tablet. Like, Grandfather Martin is the keeper of the sacred tablets of the Fire Clan. So I want to stress this, because there's three things I really need to stress. One, I'm not a carrier. I'm a messenger of this separate prophecy. Two, they asked me, do you believe you have that little missing piece of the rock in the Hopi prophecy? No, I do not believe that the rock they gave me was that rock. I believe, and I've been told, it is symbolic of what that rock meant. That, you know, the rock was about something that the Hopi had lost, something you're missing, which was the compassion. That as of 100 years ago, they'd been infighting, and to bring this compassion was sort of the whole point of this Hopi Tibet prophecy. The third thing I really need to stress is that I am not making any money off any of this. That Massav, the Hopi creator, says that you are not allowed to sell the prophecy. And so I want to make it super clear that I've never, you know, done anything to make money from the prophecy ever. That my income is from being a psychotherapist, and that everything I've done has been purely volunteer. And it's very, very important, because they say to sell the prophecy would be like selling your own mother. And personally, I like this, because it seems like when money gets involved, people get, you know, like nuts. And as long as I'm just doing this from heart, there's not a problem. So I just want to stress that even when I did this book, I didn't get paid for it. The website, not paid for it. None of, like, these radio shows, not paid for it. It is why we came. It is our mission to come and spread this. It is not, you know, to come up with some income-producing sort of seminar. So I super just wanted to stress that.
Absolutely. And we thank you. We thank you for all the work that you do and continue to do, and that you will do in the future. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for waking up and remembering, getting on task, being the person that this wonderful being came through. So that speaks a volume to who you are, what your mission is here on Earth. And then
it's so important that I tell on these shows, for everybody who's listening or whatever, to try and remember too, that they say everyone on Earth right now, you know, is the reincarnation of some amazing person. They say everyone's back. Everyone. And so, you know, I've had people say, well, how am I supposed to know? Well, I recommend, since I'm a dreamer, ask for a dream. I recommend that you not pay somebody, you know, to tell you who you are. I recommend that you ask for a dream yourself. Ask for some kind of sign, whatever works for you. Okay, why did I come? Because it's super important I share, everybody here has a part. And these people that are, you know, upset and freaking out and, you know, rioting and whatever, it comes from this place of not remembering. It's like the Tibetans talk about them feeling separate, that in Tibetan Buddhism they talk about, you know, being able to merge with the infinite mind. And so when you tap into that, you just sort of know it's going to be okay. And that truly, I believe, every being on this planet right now has this potential. And I'm hoping that if they hear this radio show, they might remember. So that's to me, the most important message, if I can give anything at all.
Perfect. And to add on to that, the second part of that is, the first part is to remember, and the second part of that is to find your soul group. When we come together, we amplify the frequencies and what we're supposed to be grounding here in the third dimension. So that's another reason why we created the Starseed Hotline for all the people to come together, start finding their soul groups, and to power up, as it were.
Well, do you mind if I comment that? Because on this last show I did, that Coast to Coast show, this man called in and said, you know, were you always like this? And I said, well, sort of yes, but sort of no. I was very lonely as a, you know, two-year-old out on the mesas talking to the, like, tumbleweeds and the horny toads because I hadn't found my clan, my tribe. I thought it was just me, but they told me there are others here and that more and more and more were coming. So in the last 10 years since they came looking for me, I have met my tribe more and more and more, and it's hard to even explain this joyous feeling of, oh my gosh, we're all back. I remember you. It's like some huge family reunion where, you know, you're like, I didn't know if I'd see you again. And so I get letters and I meet people and I'm like, I can't explain it. I just feel like I know you. It's like, me too. So I completely agree that it's so important to connect with, you know, the others that are like us.
Absolutely. And then on that note, how can people who are listening to this, because it's going to be an archive, so you'll continue to gather more of your people, more of the soul group. How do they get a hold of you?
Oh, I have an email account that I set up for this, and it's K, you know, for Kimberly, R-U-F-F, because that's my last name, MFT, because that's like my job, marriage family therapist. So it's K-R-U-F-F, MFT, at AOL.com. And so I've gotten all these letters, so please let everyone know that I will absolutely do my best to respond to everyone. I don't know how long that will take, but I'm not going to send out some form letter, thanks for your interest. No, that part of this is to reach out to each person. And so I'm, you know, I've got like my life, my children, my private practice. And so I do this when I have time, but I'm getting it done. I mean, I've already gotten through a bunch of letters and kind of it's fun. I mean, I have met some really neat people. I mean, I have not gotten a lot of nasty letters. No, I have gotten the sweetest, sweetest letters, people saying, thank you. You know, I'm so tired of hearing this doom and gloom stuff. Thank you, thank you. And so, yeah, it's so tell them if they want to write me. Tell them to also check out Valerie's website, www.thegroundcrew.com. You know, that because there's lots of us. It's not just your Starseed thing or Valerie's Ground Crew thing. There's more and more all over. If you just get on the Internet, you can begin to find and, of course, I say ask for a dream and then go with the one that you feel the most resonance with.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Kimberly. I know that you need to leave here pretty soon to go pick up your son. We have so appreciated and I have so enjoyed speaking to you. And I will actually be reaching out to you because there's a couple of things I think that you and I could work together on here coming up soon.
Oh, and another therapy? Are you kidding?
That'd be great. That's so great. Any parting words, anything else you want to leave us with?
I just want to thank you guys for what you're doing because, you know, grandfather asked me to get out there in 2012. I just sent him a big Valentine's package with candy and everything to tell him, you know, I'm doing it. I'm doing what you asked me. And it doesn't feel like a chore. It feels so happy. And so I love what you guys are doing because if you weren't out there doing this radio show, most people would not hear this. And so, you know, I feel like we all have our assignment. And I guess, you know, you guys are in charge of the radio department. So anyway,
there's many like-minded people out there. Oh, thank you so much, Kimberly. And thank you for being here, and we'll look at probably having you on again. So over to you, Ariel.
Thanks. Thank you so much. Well, bye-bye. Bye.
Kimberly, before you go.
Oh, sure. Please.
Everybody, from wherever you are, we're going to sing happy birthday to you.
Oh, you're so sweet. That's so sweet.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday,
birthday
dear Kimberly. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you. I'm going to go get my son, and we're going to go get some food, and then we're going to open presents, and it's a good thing. Okay, thank you, you guys.
Well,
have a great interview with Suzanne. Thank you so much.
Have a great interview. Have a great dinner.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you so much. Well, just a little shout-out to Ralph. I know you had a question that we didn't have time to get to, but remember that email address. It's kruff, R-U-F-F, you know, like FF, like Frank, R-U-F-F, and then M-F-T for marriage family therapy, I think, something like M-F-T at AOL.com. So, Ralph, you can write that down and send your question to Kimberly, because I'm sorry we didn't have time to get you on live with her. And we do have Suzanne on deck waiting to come on, so let's welcome Suzanne Toro. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure. So, as you know, Kimberly is just now off on her birthday dinner. And
yes.
why don't you start and segue on how you and Kimberly know each other and what you have done together, and then we'll take it off on your own direction.
Sure. How Kim and I met was how pretty much the Hopi-Tibetan magic works. All my trips out to Hopi have been a calling from not necessarily a phone, but from my solar plexus and the Hopi spirit. I'm very connected to Masu'u, who is their kind of the overseer of the underworld, so to speak. And so on my third call, which I call, that I usually will wake up and know that day I need to go to Hopi. I live in L.A., so it's quite a drive, but I can't really resist it. So on that day, I felt it in my solar plexus I needed to go to Hopi, and my partner at the time called, and he said, "You're going to Hopi today?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm going to Hopi." And I had dug up a tool when I was a child in Tucson that I knew I needed to return to Grandfather Martin. But now I think it was to intercept Tim and Joe more than anything. On that day when I realized I was going, he happened to know Kim and reached out just to see if she could help arrange for me to meet with Grandfather. Well, that was the day she and Joe were already there. So I went out, and then I met her on the at the cultural center, and met Joe. When I was driving up, I didn't know about Joe, his background. I have deep Tibetan roots as well as Hopi roots, I guess somewhere in the middle, the underworld. But I was chanting Om Tara Tu Tara Tu Le Svaha the whole way as I drove up across the painted desert. And I was like, gosh, why am I chanting this Green Tara, who's very close to me, mantra? It wasn't until I got there, because again, I was just going on this gut feeling, that I realized, and you know, even after I met Joe, I still didn't know completely his history, because it was all so quick. And then we went to Grandfather's, and I was just kept watching over him, and realized that I had this like past history on some level with him and with Green Tara. And then that's when I started to have it revealed to me who he was, and it made perfect sense to me. And then when the Lost City of the Dead was presented to me, I was completely, dots were being connected for me. And that's how Kim and I's relationship started, between the Lost City of the Dead, Grandfather, and Joe. And from that day on, we've been in connectivity with this prophecy that's unfolding, and working together in tandem on our different trips in and out of Hopi.
And so I know you were on the switchboard when Kimberly was talking, and is there any piece of the puzzle that, and she didn't have a whole lot of time, so she gave us a condensed version, what would you like to add to round out that story, if anything?
Well, I think the biggest thing for people to remember, as I've been working with this energy and Masu'u from the underworld, is that two things that are being revealed to me, and even the elders that I have come in contact with at Hopi and around the world, is one, that we're embarking on an age where nothing's written. So many of us are connected to our past, you know, our memories, but we're actually going through this process of reconciliation, and it's a beautiful time in this next year to take that time to reconcile. And as in the Tibetan instance, it's called the bardo. You go through the bardo and you have a chance or an opportunity to reconcile pieces of ego and determine what's next. And the same thing in the underworld with Masa'u, there's always like this instant capability of going through and in and out of these tunnels that link to that tunnel in the Grand Canyon, or the big womb, I call it, in the Grand Canyon. So with this prophecy, I feel what's happening is what happened in Tibet when the teachings were brought to Tibet to clear the energy. We're actually bringing the energy to North America that actually has, for more intensive purposes, really altered the way we live on this planet. And this is our opportunity to make new choices for the future and write the future, and not be attached any longer to what we thought we knew, and be prepared to realize that we're so much more complex and connected to many world systems in this universe. And Hopi anchors that. They're lined up with the galactic center. And we will have this beautiful opportunity to merge these worlds.
Well, Sierra, we're going back to you now, Sierra. I know you've got questions.
Perfect. Okay, great. I'm just chomping at the bit here. Hi, I'm Sierra. How are you doing, Suzanne?
Great. Nice to meet you, Sierra.
Oh, it's nice to meet you, too. Specifically, what actually brought you? I know you kind of touched on it a little bit. I want to kind of get into the meat of things with you on the phone here. Several questions that I have for you, but what specifically brought you to the Hopi here in Arizona? What was the calling? I know you said you felt it in your solar plexus. It was just that you saw the place that you needed to go. Did you just show up on the reservation one day? What was your journey to Arizona?
You know, well, since a child, I've been connected to the two. As a child, I used to try to dig back to Tibet. I was born in Hawaii and then transplanted to Tucson, Arizona. And when I was in Tucson, I just started, I think, having the memories because of the ley line of the migration pattern. I just wanted to get back to the center, either the center of the earth or to Tibet. And over the years, things would come, but it wasn't until probably about 6 or 7 years ago, a giant golden eagle, or the thunderbird as the Hopi would refer to it, came and visited me in a beach community, which is kind of odd, and just stared me down. And then subsequent things happened that kind of started to activate the memories of my lifetimes in Tibet. And then simultaneously, one day I woke up and felt Masa'u pulling at my stomach. I couldn't. For 24 hours, I tried to fight it, that was absolutely ridiculous that I would need to go to Hopi. I didn't know why. And so I really did. I said, I can't cancel my plans. I'm not going. I'm not doing it. So 24 hours later, I finally, on that first trip, went, put my daughter in the car. We drove for 10 or 11 hours. We arrived on the second mesa, at midnight. I mean, it was just such an amazing arrival. Unfortunately, that night we couldn't stay out there. The cultural center was closed for the one night of mandatory cleaning per year. So we drive back out 100 miles to get a hotel. And then the next morning, I hear I have a little girl. I'm like, I don't even know why I'm here, but this is a really powerful place. Next morning, I get up and just heard to go to the first mesa, and that's what I did. And upon our arrival, the Hopis just welcomed me in and said, we've been waiting for you. And there was the white buffalo ceremony going on, just like being welcomed home to family. So that's how my journey started, and then was taken all through, their villages, the three villages there. And, it was about that whole journey was really, I feel, the medicine that was given to me during that journey was to remind us of the balance between masculine and feminine. They continued to reiterate how they never dishonored the feminine, that there was always a symbiotic relationship between the male and female, very much what you'll see in the Andean culture and the Mayan culture, and that how it has been destroyed. Another thing that kept being showed to me was how disconnected we had become from our land, our sacred land, and our sacred teachings, and how the Hopi were actually physically watching their society become extinct.
Gotcha. Now, can you explain, paint us a visual picture a little bit. There's not a lot of people, not a lot of people that understand the first, second, third Mesa and the tradition, or basically the physicality of the Hopi Indian and how they exist here in Arizona. Can you just kind of touch base on that real quick so that people can get kind of a visual of what you're speaking about?
Yeah, so right now is the perfect time. If anyone's in a starry sky, they can look up and we can see Orion. Orion comes into the Kivas picture starting on the solstice or the winter equinox. You can see him, and if you're familiar with the constellation of Orion, the belt of Orion are the three mesas. The Hopi, over the last four worlds, which were fourth to fifth dimension, they migrated, and this was their destination, to be at that belt of Orion. So the first mesa, if you're looking at the sky, is the far right. The second mesa, which is considered the mother mesa, is the center. And then the third mesa is the far left. And I guess that's depending which way you're looking, but say you're with him, you're laying on the ground with him in the same direction as his head. And
now when you say, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just saying Orion symbolizes Masa'u, their great spirit, the god of the underworld, who keeps balance, helps keep balance with Earth and the other worlds.
So they actually have physical dwellings set up in line, basically, as it would be reflected in the sky on Orion's belt.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, okay. Exactly.
And how far apart are these mesas from each other, these dwellings?
They're probably at least, well, first to second's a little bit closer, but that's probably a mile, but you have to go quite high up, so a mile to 2 miles and maybe less, but third is a little bit further down, more windy road to get to it. But, yeah, they're not super far apart, but it's still a distance, you know. It would be a walk. And the trek up the mesas is pretty steep. So if you were to walk up, it's, you know, a little bit of a drive either way. And sheer cliffs, very sheer cliffs, pretty astounding. You're literally in the middle of nowhere. The Bugs Bunny cartoons people might be familiar with, that's where he got his inspiration, absolutely, yeah. In the middle of nowhere.
Oh, that's so great. Now, here at Starseed Hotline and Starseed Radio Academy, we consider ourselves Starseed, which meaning, you know, from the stars we come, to the stars we shall return. But we're here doing our mission here on Earth to help the ascension process for human beings, you know, from the third to the fourth and fifth dimension. And it reflects a little bit in the Hopi tradition of what we're talking about. Now, what I'm interested in having you reflect on a little bit here is in your bio that you act as a bridge between nations, worlds, and dimensions. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, so kind of links back. Both Tibetan and Hopi, they're known as the star beings. And when they're in ceremony, those energies are coming through the Kachina dances and coming into the Kivas, coming up through the points of emergences. And, I communicate and move from here to there quite effortlessly, have all my life. Kind of similar to the guy in, for lack of better words, that's a good visual, the guy in Avatar when he goes in the machine and leaves his body and goes to another world. That's been my reality my whole life here on this planet. I pretty much live a 24/7 reality and typically have an awareness in 2 to 3 places at once.
Well, I'm very familiar with what you're talking about because I do the very same thing. And sometimes it was even bilocated at the same time, which is a little bit of a stretch, as you may well understand. So tell us more about who you are and what you'd like to bring to our listeners as far as any messages or anything you'd like to share with us.
Yeah, I think, there's some poems I would like to share, maybe one right now, maybe one at the end. About this bridge that we're all creating right now between worlds, between dimensions, between nations. On my second journey out there, that was, again, the symbolism of how we bridge worlds and how do we honor each other and how do we bring balance to our whole system, not even just here, but also in the universe. So if I can read that first, and then I can share a little bit more about what that means for all of us.
Please, go ahead.
So this is called Sacred Marriage, and after rainfall, the air freshens, a bright rainbow appears high above, joining each end together, like bridging two worlds in one. And that poem, and even if you look at Stephen, the Hopi prophecy of showing these two worlds separating, but it's actually how do we bridge these worlds? How do we bridge even our star nations, our galactic nations? We're in an age and a period in time where we're going to have to be open to more than what we think we know. And for you guys, you and your listeners are very aware and feel very intimate with the other worlds, but not everyone here does. And that's the unique thing about Tibet and Hopi is they pray for all beings in the universe. They talk about the world systems that exist. However, for most people on this planet, that's a big stretch for them. So for right now, during this time of purification and cleansing and aligning with self, I think if we can really think about how would we bridge worlds and are we willing and are we open, and that's why these teachings are so important to come back to Hopi to bring the understanding of what compassion is, because you can imagine no longer are we really worried about what we call countries, that we are all citizens of planet Earth, and are we willing to hold love and compassion for all beings here and from all these other places where we have all the support from but we haven't been allowed to fully understand and comprehend until now.
Beautiful. Absolutely amazing.
That makes me think of a... Yes. I just remembered something from when I was really young. Excuse me. My uncle told me... and it's just always stuck with me, and it just came back now, that it's really easy to love someone when they're doing everything right, or they're doing everything the way you like it. The real test of love is to love them when they're not doing everything right, when they're not doing what you want, when they're, you know, at odds with you. That's the true test of love. And I just always stuck with it, you know, because my uncle was not really what I'd think of as a wise man. But, yeah, I mean, it's easy to love somebody when they're doing everything right, but love them when they're doing things wrong. And that's really the test of unity and love.
Right. And compassion. You know, it's a word, a word that's sometimes not definable until you can participate in it. And then when you finally realize that there's all these beings here on this planet from other places, or with other histories that we didn't realize, you know, how are we going to treat each other? So,
Absolutely.
Completely shifts the context.
Okay. Can you share a little bit about how the? It's more of a representation, really, but I believe that the listeners can benefit from the demonstration of it, but. Can you share how the Hopi lost their compassion and then how the Tibetan prophecy then brought it back?
Well, I think what, in my humble opinion or and observation from what they've shared with me is that they were invaded. And that invasion from the Spaniards caused an upheaval. And at the same time, if you can remember, there's 13 tribes there, and if you hear that phrase sometimes, like on the mirror, here they are in complete the middle of nowhere, and they're praying, and they're in every month in a different ceremony for our world and our universe. And how many of us take time to even think about doing that on a daily basis or a monthly basis, or sit and don't eat for 4 or 5 days and pray for the entire universe and interact with spirits and realms that we don't even know that exist. When that happens and then you start connecting with the system and how it's working and where there's disharmony and disconnect, that's where I feel that they have become our mirrors of our disconnect. on this planet, and they've done their best to hold that energy, but also being impacted and not left alone. Had they been left alone, maybe they would have still held that complete vibration. However, also, every Hopi that I've met is loving and warm and welcoming. I think the disconnect for them has been where there's been the interference from outside entities and agencies that has created disharmony for them.
Gotcha. Are there any, let's talk a little bit about your bare naked dinners and the different things that you yourself provide for people. You'd you like to talk a little bit about yourself and what you provide for people?
Oh, well, what I provide for people, I am pretty much have been on a pretty intense shamanic path for a while now, and my intention behind the dinners is to reconnect people to the earth, to connect them with our resonance here. We've had our own disconnect. And so I do that through food, reminding people of the resources that were placed in front of us, that all the medicines and all the cures and all the nourishment are provided to us by Mother Earth. So in the dinners, I gather people to connect with storytelling, very much like Indigenous tribe, conversation to reconnect with community, and then inspire community giving in that giving and receiving and modeling that within the dinners, and awaken parts of people that if you lived more a simple life like the Indigenous, people would start to realize the frequencies and the harmonies that are available every time you take a bite into something, every time you walk through an area or put your foot on the ground, realizing that we are fed so much abundant energy every single moment. So that's my intention behind those dinners. And then one-on-one, I work with harmonics and frequencies from our star reflections to remind and reflect back through sound for the individual that's ready to reconnect with who they are and kind of reharmonize with their place on this planet and in, within the universe. And then the final thing that I do is I like to interview and tell stories of people and shine a light on all the amazing things that people are doing on this planet to bring awareness to the good things that are happening. We are saturated oftentimes with the trauma and not fed the song. That's what I do.
So say a little bit more about that. You shine light on different things. How do you go about doing that?
I do it through writing, and then I also do it through broadcasting and some mixed media. Typically, my life is very, it's just serendipitous. So the people that cross my path, just like even you guys crossing my paths, will be part of the woven story. So I just weave. I'm a weaver, a cosmic weaver. So people cross, and then there's dots to be connected. So that starts usually through a conversation, then sometimes a broadcast, and then also connecting people here to there, maybe on different sides of the world, to create peace on this planet and harmony.
That's a big job, so thank you for doing that. A really big job. I can see you as this galactic weaver, you know, energetically weaving all the different things. When you said that, it just came to mind. So, but it looks like you've led such a terrific life, you know, working with Deepak Chopra, David Simon. Do you want to share any stories or anything that you think would inspire us in 2012 and what we should be, the inner work that we should be focusing on?
Yeah, I think what I would love to encourage everyone to do is, you know, years ago when I went down into Costa Rica, had a dear friend of mine that I was working with, and something activated, and it was like we got a thunderbolt right through both of our hearts simultaneously. And that was like this awakening of a memory that was very painful for me, and that's from Tibet. And I had to go through a lot of recapitulation, a lot of memories, and understanding why I was being reminded now. And I really encourage everyone to understand or take some time to sit and be with self and remember some core things that, you know, either are really juicy in the sense that they activate you and cause you maybe sadness, emotions, whatever they might be. Take the time to clear that energy from your heart and get that heart as clear and full as possible because the passage we're going into, it is like we are collectively going through as a planet through the Bardo right now, and we're all be giving that chance. While I was given that opportunity to go through it a little bit in a different way, a lot of people on this planet are going to go through it rapid fire, almost baptism by fire. And just to be gentle with yourself and to remember the heart is the key to the universe, and that's our gateway to the place that we ultimately all want to reside. It's infinite, it's abundant, it's compassionate, it's harmonious, and it's peaceful. And recently being out, there's an institute in Chino Valley, Arizona. It's called the Garshan Institute. The vibration, if anyone is in the area, I'd highly recommend. It's a great time to go. You can go and stay there for however long you want. They have as low as lease expenses as $8 for camping, and not the highest room. I think it's like $60 for a room. Not that far from Hopi. It faces the Sacred Mountain, the Kachina Mountain, that the Hopi also work with. So you could go visit both places, but if you want to feel that heart energy that I'm discussing, that's where it's anchored. And you can't deny it when you walk into the field of it. And the longer you stay, the more it'll embed itself into your entire energetic being.
What's the name of that place one more time?
It's called the Garshan Institute in Chino Valley, Arizona. It's just north of Prescott.
Can you spell that?
G-A-R-C-H-E-N and then Institute. And that's in Prescott Valley, just north of Prescott Valley. It's not hard to find. You can go on the internet. It's garshaninstitute.org, I believe. Garshan Rinpoche, who Kim and I went and met with last year, and this is a testament of the energy field he holds. He's a living, breathing Buddha holding love and compassion. It's not by accident that he's anchoring there in Arizona, so close to Hopi. He fought his way out of Tibet to protect the Buddha Dharma for all beings in the universe. Something people should remember, there are times and instances in world systems where there are no spiritual teachings. So in that instance, when they were removed from Tibet, if the lineage is broken, the teaching stops. So he actually fought and ended up in prison for 20 years. And at one point in time, he thought he just wanted to die because he thought he was going to lose his sense of compassion. That didn't happen, and he came out, and he's been traveling all over the world. And when we met him, I took my two small children to watch his documentary. And if you can imagine, 2.5 hours subtitled English movie that's a little hard to follow. He was with us in the audience. My children sat there and did not move at all.
Wow.
So that's the energy he holds to keep an 8-year-old and 11-year-old without even once asking, "Can we go now?" is powerful. And my daughter had to get a prayer wheel when she left because he spins the prayer wheel continuously. And that was the one thing after he came out of prison, was able to return to Tibet. They had hidden the prayer wheel and reinstated it in Tibet so those prayers could keep going for all beings in the universe.
Beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah. Ariel, do you have any questions or Lavendar at this time?
Well, no, but we do have callers with questions, so let's go to
sure.
the switchboard. And we are going to talk with Ralph first. Hang on a second, Ralph. Let me get your mic open. Okay. Ralph, you are on the air. You have a question for Suzanne?
Yes. Thank you very much. It's a very nice show. Enjoyed for both Kimberly and Suzanne. And I just have a quick question, Suzanne. You you mentioned about your eating habits. Are you a vegetarian or a vegan?
No, I'm not a vegan. I'm primarily vegetarian, sometimes fish, kind of a when-in-Rome girl. I've traveled to many tribes around the world where they raise their animals and they feed, that's how they feed the village. When you witness something like that, it's a little bit different. So I always try to be in respect of where I am and honor the communities and their traditions. But my body likes veggies. So I am a nut and veggie girl primarily, but I also use cheese to ground me because I travel between dimensions. I sometimes need that to stay in my body. So.
And I was wondering if you do you see that this manner of consuming food, in particular, being closer to being a vegetarian, is a way of creating a clearing or greater harmony, or you know, raising the consciousness at this particular time?
I think everyone needs to tune into what their body needs, honestly, because we're all from different places, and we need to harmonize with our place in the cosmos. We've been spoon-fed ideas and concepts of whether it's five square meals or this new diet or that new diet. We really need to bring back our intuition center to what we are consuming and why we are consuming it. And in reality, we don't need that much food at all. We can sustain off very, very little. So if you go into that dialogue even while you're eating and then what does your body really need, we become more in harmony with the human species, the animal kingdom, and we realize what we need to eat on this planet. And that's why it's so beautiful to see a tribe like raise even an animal and take care of it and then really understand why they have that relationship with it and what it's there for. And the Hopis, to remember, even the Tibetans, not all lineages are vegetarian, because even where they live, you know, when you're in an arid place or really high altitude, you only are limited to how much, you know, vegetables you can have growing.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much for calling, Ralph. Bye-bye. Okay, next we're going to, we're going to talk to Max, and let me get your mic open for a second here. Let's, okay, you're on the air, Max.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Susan. I'm calling in. I just wanted to kind of comment, and then it's not so much a question. I've been connected to the Hopis and the Tibetans since I was very young, when I lived back in Germany, and I was connected to them. Firstly, how they got my attention was through the Hopi ear candles. My mother used to use them, and I always felt a very, very strong connection to these ear candles. So some of you might want to consider using the Hopi ear candles. The other thing I wanted to say is, and I feel it, the Dalai Lama will be very important in the context of disclosure, because I feel that the Tibetan Buddhist religion will it's becoming very popular, especially amongst the younger generation, and it will be very important in the context of disclosure, like I said. And this is just a message for all Tibetan monks and Dalai Lama too, that they should read the books by Marshall V.N. Summers, The Allies of Humanity. That's just what I wanted to say. Okay, thank you so much for all the great work you do, and I'll be off air. Thank you all.
Okay, Max. Oh, well, I was going to say to Max, the Dalai Lama is definitely involved in the closure of this beautiful prophecy. So that will, and has been in the works. There's very much a dialogue in many dimensions with he and the Hopi. So, yeah.
Good. What I meant by disclosure was the ET alien disclosure to the human public.
Mm. Yeah, everything will happen in its, the Tibetans will always say everything will happen where all things are aligned. So we must sometimes sit in patience, even though we have some information, to allow all things to align. Remember, we're in this big, giant, complex system. So while we want people to speak or act, sometimes the alignment is not there. And that's why we're seeing this beautiful crescendo right now on Earth. Everything's starting to align, and we are going through our rite of passage. And so that which needs to be revealed will be revealed in the perfect moment.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're
welcome. Thank you, Max. Okay, let me just take a quick look down here on the switchboard. We do have a lot of callers tonight, but that was the last caller with a question. So if you have a question, you need to press 1 on your keypad so that we know if you're wishing to make a comment or ask a question. So while we're waiting for that to happen, we can continue.
Yeah, I can share a little bit on what was coming to me intuitively is about the underworld, another point of preparation for all beings on this planet. One is, you know, clearing the heart, but also to start understanding how our system works. And we're a self-contained system that works with the moon and the sun, and then we have these other planets within our system. Masa'u is the underworld, and so many of us might be here from other places, but then there's the human species that are also here from this planet. We can all think about how we're going to relate to that world system and the underworld. And the underworld is linked to those the lost city of the lost world of the dead. I know Jack also, and that area holds such knowledge and wisdom on this planet, and then there's all these tunnels that go throughout our whole world system. So if you're inclined to take time to be still and really contemplate what that means and how you relate to the Earth, and if you actually remember going in and out of the Earth and to see what arrives, a lot of information is being released in our astral world and in our subconscious right now. So if you put some attention on it, you might be surprised at what you start to remember about that.
Well, would you please, just for the listeners that are a little unclear, define underworld in your terms?
The underworld, well, in the Hopi, it's they'll define it as each dimension, the first world, the second world, the third, and the fourth world emerged, and it's almost stacked. And how it's been shown to me many times is, you know, and for some of you that we're speaking with right now can relate to that, by locating and being in multiple places at once, that we're multidimensional beings. So even when you're out at Hopi, you can actually feel the dinosaurs. You can still, like I can almost, I always say I can taste them. They're still there. So this is a little bit of a quantum physics concept of that the underworld, these points of emergence in the kivas, when they do ceremony, the energies come up through the earth. The same with the cave that's buried in the Grand Canyon with the Buddha. There's this one room that's all these, it basically feels like the Hall of Records. There's another location on the planet in Iran that's the same. It houses these giant libraries of information. So many of us, if we're used to meditating or going out into the universe, we also want to remember to go into the earth. Sometimes we'll just use the earth to ground, but the earth houses billions and billions of years of information. That's always there for every single one of us to access, yet we haven't always been invited to do so. And Masa'u will kind of guide that. He used to guide the migrations of the first, second, third, and fourth. Well, I imagine he'll guide this one also. He puts a footprint that's a labyrinth, and then what it's made of, if you go to Jack Andrews' site, you'll see a picture that he took on the edge of the rim of the Grand Canyon. And the ants actually urinate and create these concentric circles going inward. And that would be his footprint, and that would be a sign to move on and start the migration for the next dimension. And then the Hopis would break all their pottery and move forward and start their migration. They have moved in the shape of the Orion Zone. If you go to Gary David's site, the Orion Zone, you'll see maps, and they show how they've migrated and how it mirrors the constellation of Orion, which is aligned with the Milky Way. Again, we have all these clues to remind us, as above, so below, and so below, be it in the earth. So it's time for us to reconnect to this wisdom, and like I said, start imagining what is possible for the next, knowing that the old stories are almost done.
What site was that you were mentioning?
Gary David is the author of the Orion Zone, and on his home page there's these maps, and you can see the constellations, and you'll see on the metaphorical, like you might have seen in on the far right shoulder is the blue star, and the far left base of the body is the red star. Oh, I'm sorry, I have it reversed. Blue star and red star, but one is Betelgeuse that might go to a supernova, we don't know, which has happened before. But his book, that book is a wealth of information. He did an amazing job collecting, and he's holding a beautiful vessel there. Highly encourage people, if you really want to understand part of who we are on this planet, to check it out and read it, spend some time with it. It's a lot of information and a wealth of knowledge.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, how can people get a hold of you if they would like to work with you? Do you do that type of work with people?
I work with people one-on-one all over the globe, so virtually or in person. And they can go to SuzanneToro.com is my site, or they can email me at suzanneToro.com.
So your first initial, or your first name and first and last name at AOL.com?
Yep. No, it's just s@suzannetoro.com. So my website's SuzanneToro, and just the letter s@suzannetoro.com.
Perfect. Would you like to share with us that other poem that you're waiting for?
Yeah, I can do that. So this is called Horizon. Run, my son, run, my daughter, go and fetch your cornmeal pouch. Run across the vastness of Mother Earth. Run beneath the brightness of Father Sun. Go and bless her and him for another new day. Be one with you. Be one with yours.
That's beautiful. Wow. So where did those come from, those particular poems? Did you create those? Did you channel those? Do they come from a oral tradition?
These came from... one of my journeys there, when I got a call from my solar plexus, and I was led by double rainbows the whole way there to Hopi, and it was back on the first mesa, very different experience, very desolate, was seeing kind of the aftermath of kind of what we created, where the disharmony between the male and the female. And at the end of having this time with a Hopi elder and his wife, he asked just to wait. His brother had my poems, and when I came out of their home and then was getting ready to go, this gentleman came up. He kind of looked like a Harvard professor on many terms, but he gave me these poems, and I've been carrying them really ever since, kind of close to my heart. I haven't really shared them that much. He read Sacred Marriage to me, which was really profound for me, because that was my connection between the two worlds. So there's a few others if you want to hear them.
Absolutely. Please share with us.
Yeah, so the other one is called Path Trails, Ancient Footsteps. Ancient footprints still remain along paths and trails. Songs of our forefathers still remain. We follow paths and trails. The ancient ones walked, listening to songs of long, humming along. And that is from the Flower Mound. He wrote that at the Flower Mound poem, which is where the maidens would go, and out of the top, it's this beautiful giant sand pillar where the flowers bloom after the buffalo dance into spring. And I just remember the first time when I was there, just holding that column and just welcoming in that balancing between the masculine and feminine, and then being able to look out, because on the first and second mesa, you can see from the first to the second mesa, and you can see the cliffs, and you can just imagine all these ancient songs. And for those of you that love the Grand Canyon, I heard earlier, it's the same thing. You can just remember all these ancient memories, and that those feed us into the next. They lead us into the next. It's really a beautiful time that we have right now. I feel so grateful that we all are convening at this moment.
Those poems are beautiful, beautiful metaphors for, you know, for the other statements like you just made. It speaks volumes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that was coming to my mind, if I can just share one more thing from Maso'u that's been kind of revealed to me in my most recent interactions with Tibet and Hopi, is a reminder, as I talked about those tunnels, we're heading in, and even in this past week, because they visit me, not only do I visit them physically, but in the dreams, the Kachinas and Maso'u, our time is disappearing. We're going to, even my time down in Guatemala, time is going away. So even though when we say the time is now, actually, just to really even think about abandoning that word. And the reason I want to encourage everyone to think about abandoning that word is for two things. We, the Hopis and the Tibetans, go on a 13-month lunar calendar cycle. There's no time. We're just cycling around. And even if you look at the wheel of life, of samsara, we continue to go around that wheel until we've mastered self. So to think about that, and then what is being communicated is that we will be releasing all these ancient teachings, we will be releasing time, we'll be releasing Mayans that have held time for us because we no longer need it, because we're going into a period of manifestation, which means that things will appear instantly, but you have to be willing to release one, what you think you know, and two, your attachment to what was. So even as us, all of us are rising in a vibration and holding a frequency right now and may have a resonance with the past, even for myself, I will also be asked to release that which I think I knew and make peace with it. So if all of us on the planet can release our ancient scriptures, we can welcome in this beautiful sunrise as the Mayan elders have taught me, in 2013, which is a time of manifestation, and leads us into that ability to live in that frequency, which is something I remember and know so well from other places in the universe.
Well, it's getting closer all the time. And so you're thinking that you should, instead of saying the time is now, just the time is.
I say the space is now. I've been saying that. The space is now. The magic occurs in the moment, even like from my initial invitation to come back to home, you know, to come to Hopi, to come back to Tibet, was now, was in the moment. It wasn't about next week or on this date or that date. It teaches you to listen, oh, I need to be here now, or I need to be there now. And if we all moved within that vibration, we would be harmonious with ourselves and each other, because we would be exactly where we always needed to be. There would be no attachment. There would be no suffering. There would be no trying to convince people of this, that, or the other. We would just be doing what we loved.
Follow your bliss.
Mm-hmm. Follow your bliss.
Yes. Well, we
oh,
have
what
we
a
have
world.
Another...
I'm sorry. Oh, what a world that will be, yes?
Uh-huh.
It's a really glorious, euphoric world. Really,
we do have another caller with a question. So as soon as I get the mic open, you're on the air, Jeremy.
Good evening, ladies. Thank you once again for all of your wonderful work. I just have a quick question for Suzanne. Thank you so much, Suzanne. Are you still in Los Angeles because I'm really curious about your sound healing techniques and your background in healing and sound retuning for the body and spirit.
I am in LA at the current moment.
Okay.
And yeah, I don't. Do you have a specific question you want to know about my sounding?
Or just the sort of the background, where it comes from, what kind of what sort of the impetus and the approaches are, any sort of traditions you use in your sound, because I both. I'm interested in the practice myself, and also I'm a sound person. I'm a musician, so anything that produces sort of catharsis through something that's very intimate to me is important. So it's a place of exploration for me.
Definitely, and it's you bring up a beautiful point because the harmonics of music are changing. The resonance on our planet are changing right now. And even the way we know of music is changing. So the way we were taught is going to be totally different and realized differently. My lineage comes from Tibet and Native American and an influence from Guatemala that was very much resurrected in me piece by piece and from star and galactic nations. So in sessions with me, depending what the individual spirit or soul reflects, that's what comes through. In a sequence. It comes through my throat. I also, through the Star Nations, communicate through the keyboard and through the flute and through a Tibetan bell. And there's a crystal bowl that's about to be delivered to me. I don't know from where, but it will be arriving soon because I can already feel it. Each one by one, they were returned to me, or for now. I don't think they could have. It was kind of interesting. My mother really wouldn't even let me near the piano, and I had such a love affair with the piano. I even set up with a church woman to go and get free lessons. I would ride myself there. She wouldn't even let me touch it in the house, and now I understand why. It wasn't until I was at Lake Atitlan did I start to have the remembrance of that the keys actually speak from the universe. They have a conversation with you if you listen.
Oh, yeah.
And I would guide my friend, and you can relate if you played music. Oh, they want to say this, they want to say that. And then I had the memory when I was there, it was like a piece of me just fell away that I wanted to work with the keyboard in a way that really takes you into a trance state, takes you out of your body. Since my medicine is about the underworld, death and birth, transition, I take people through a shamanic death without medicine, basically.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. And I really understand what you say about the trance states and about the reharmonizing of our sonic universes. I just know that I've been playing slightly different music than I was last year, and it's sort of a very intimate, small sound language, but it's very intense and very harmonious and very healing language. So I was just curious as to what your modalities were. And it sounds really wonderful. So you might very well hear from me about a session soon. It sounds beautiful, really wonderful. Thank you.
I love working with musicians.
Much.
Okay,
excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, ladies. Have a wonderful evening.
Oh, you're welcome, Jeremy. Thanks for calling. Well, we only have a few minutes to go, so Suzanne, if you have any closing thoughts or something that you would like to leave as a going home point.
Yeah, I think I'll give you the two more poems. They're very short. Seems like it should come from Hopi, not me.
Okay.
The first is Cliffs. Above I stand on a mesa top. Across I see faces of mesa cliffs. Each face has their own song. They sing in turn, singing lo loma, singing qua qua. It's good to be alive.
Oh, that's nice. I like that one.
Good reminder for all of us right now as we walk through the fire. Just say that feels good. Feels good to purify. And this one is called Us, not flesh of my flesh, nor bone of my bone, though miraculously my own, never for a single minute, you did not grow under my heart, but in it.
Wow, and that one gave me chills.
I got that one. That was great.
Yeah. Powerful medicine from Hopi.
Well, it has really been a pleasure having you with us. And Kimberly, wherever you are out there having a wonderful birthday party, we thank you as well. And once again, before we go, Suzanne, your website is suzannetoro.com.
Mm-hmm.
And your email address is S, like Suzanne, at suzannetoro.com.
That's correct.
Okay.
Perfect.
Great. Well, thank
I appreciate
you so much. Thank you so much for being here. And we do want you to keep in touch, and hopefully, since we had to, you know, split the time, maybe you and Kimberly can both come back and answer questions that maybe we didn't get to tonight.
Yeah, it'd be fun. To share some star harmonics with all of you. So that would be great. Thank you for what you're doing and making people feel at home here on planet Earth.
Well, we're all in it together, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
I have a request. I was just led to ask, is there a tone that you can leave us with, Suzanne?
Yeah, I can leave you with a little. If everyone will just connect to their heart center with me, taking a deep breath in. They're all beautiful love.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Suzanne Toro, thanks for being with us, and we do look forward to talking to you again in the future. And callers, thank you for calling in. Listeners, we'll be back next week, Tuesday, same time, same place. Lavendar, Sierra, and Sahar, thank you so much for your work on the switchboard. And we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.